And they would eat the korbanos, and as they eat the korbanos, Elkanah would give to Penina and to all of her children. He would give her manos, as the pasuk says in pasuk dalet, and Chana he would give a much more limited portion because she didn't have the same number of children. However, the pesukim say that the pasuk says in pasuk hey he gave her mana achas apayim, different interpretations of what exactly that means. But essentially, it sounds like he gave her some sort of special portion. Either he gave her a large portion, much larger than she was deserving, since she was only one person and did not have any children. Some say he gave her a double portion, but he gave her some nice portion to try to make her feel better. After all, she had no children. And we concluded last week with Pasuk Vav. And Pasuk Vav reads that Penina, who was the tzara, who was the co-wife of Chana, would start to chepper her. She would start to taunt her and to make her feel badly and to make fun of her and say, oh, you know, have you bought clothing for your children? Oh, yeah, I forgot, you know, you don't have children. And she would say things like that to make her feel bad. And the simple understanding of the pasuk is that she was just doing it to make her feel bad. But of course, Chazal tell us that was not her intention, but her intention was to get her to daven. That we know the whole point of this, as many of the Mefarshim have said, the whole point of HaKadosh Baruch Hu making Chana and Akara, not allowing Chana to have children, was so that she would be able to daven. She would be able to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a more meaningful and a deeper way. And apparently she was not doing justice. She wasn't doing it properly until that point. And therefore, this was Penina's way of encouraging Chana to daven. So by making her feel badly, by cheppering her, by taunting her, that would encourage Chana to daven because she was getting more and more desperate to have children, and therefore she would turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the pasuk seems to say. Okay, and now we are up to pasuk Zayin. So let's read pasuk Zayin together. You can read it if you have a navi in front of you. You can read it there. You can read it on your screen. V'chein yaseh shana v'shana midei alosa beveis Hashem. So this would happen each and every year. Each and every year when they would go up to the Beis Hashem. Every year Elkanah would go up to Davin. Every year he would go up. He would bring korbanos. He would distribute the korbanos. Every year Penina would get her portions. And every year Chana would get her portion, limited portion, obviously. And also every year, kein tachisena vativke velo sochal. Every single year, Penina would make her feel badly. Penina would taunt her. She would feel badly about it, and every year she would be upset. Chana would be upset. Vativke, she would cry. Velo tochal, and she would not eat. She would not eat her, even though she was given korbanos. She was given portions and things that she could eat, but she would not eat the korbanos that she was given. So it's interesting. The Alshich points out that this pasuk is really a proof that Penina did this l'shem shamayim. Why? Because the pasuk says that each and every year she did it, and when did she do it? Only midei alos aveis Hashem. So asks the Alshich an obvious question: that if Penina was doing this just to make her feel badly, if Penina was doing it just to be mean, right, just to be a tzara and to be mean and to make her feel badly, why would she only do it? Why would she only do it? Midei alos beveis Hashem. Why would she only do it when they went up to the house of Hashem, when they went up to Shiloh, to the Mishkan? What about she would do it? You know, she should do it even at home. She should do it at all times. She would make her feel badly consistently. But she didn't. She didn't do that. She only made her feel badly this once a year or several times a year that they went up to the Beis Hashem. Midei alos beveis Hashem, says the Alshich, that proves that this was completely l'shem shamayim. This was only l'shem shamayim because she limited. She never made her feel badly, Penina. When they were home, she treated her very nicely. Only ba'alosa beveis Hashem. Only when midei alosa beveis Hashem. Only when they came up to the Beis Hashem, that's when Penina made her feel badly. Specifically because she wanted her to daven. Specifically because she wanted to encourage her to daven. And it's interesting that the pasuk ends almost with an emotional, psychological point. Vativke velo sochal, right? She was so upset. She was so distraught. She was crying over the taunting and the barbs of Penina that she didn't eat. She couldn't eat. She didn't have an appetite to eat because she was so distraught and she was so upset by what was going on. Okay. Pasuk Ches. Vayomer lo Elkana Isha Chana Lama Sivki Velama lo Sochli Velama Yera Levavech. So Elkana, her husband, turns to her and says, Chana, number one, why are you crying? Lama Sivki. Number two, Lame lo Sochli, why are you not eating? Right, you have these karbanos. You have so much, not just good food, but you have basar kodshim. You have holy food, good food to eat. V'lama yera levavech. And why are you so upset? Why are you so distraught? Halo anochi tov lach me'asara banim. I'm better for you than 10 children. Now, this is an interesting comment that he makes here. That he's better, than 10 children. Again, the simple understanding here is very strange. Why is he asking all these questions? It's obvious why she's upset, right? It's obvious why she's, why she's not happy and why she's crying and why she doesn't eat. Because she's distraught. Because she's being made fun of. Because she's upset. It all makes sense. And even the claim that he's saying, "Hello, Anochi Tovlach Me'asara Banim, I'm better than 10 sons." What is that supposed to mean? I'm better than 10 sons. If a woman wants a child, her husband can turn to her from today until tomorrow and say, hey, you have me. What do you need children for? Look at me. You have me. Okay. Right? She doesn't want him. She wants children. She doesn't want just him. So what exactly is going on? What exactly is Elkanah trying to express to her? So the Mefarshim explained that Elkanah is really trying to get to the bottom of why Chana is so upset. Right? Why, Chana, why are you so upset? What's really going on here? Why are you crying? Obviously, he knows she's crying because she doesn't have any children. He's not thick-skulled. He understands what's going on here. But he's asking, what benefit are you going to get from crying? Right? What's going to happen here? What's going to improve if you're crying? Number one, the Mefarshim say that if you just want love. You just want emotional connection. You want love and an emotional connection from your children. So I'll show you that love. And I do show you that love. And I can show you love more than 10 sons would show you. There's a question in the Rishonim how to understand this. More than 10 sons would show you. More than Penina's 10 sons show me. Different ways of understanding it. Might not be exactly 10 sons. 10. It might be just a round, large number 10. But either way, essentially he's saying that if this is emotional, I can compensate for that, for those emotions. If you're looking for someone to show you love, you're looking for someone to show you that emotional connection, I could be the one to do that. also, he says, lama lo sochli v'lama yera levavech. Right? Why are you not eating? Part of this also, he's saying psychologically, that if you eat and your physical body will feel better, emotionally you'll feel better. We know, right? The psychologists tell us that one of the ways if a person is not, not feeling great from a psychological standpoint, so of course they need to go through treatment and whatever else they have to do. But many recommend getting exercise, right? Taking care of your body, because the healthier your body is, the healthier you're going to feel, even in your mind. So it's the same thing here, right? Eat well, eat up, and Amir Tzah Hashem, you'll feel a little bit better. The Al-Sheikh and the Malbim also point out here, interestingly, that a woman is not obligated, technically obligated, from a mitzvah perspective to have children, right? So we know we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Pru Revu, to have children, and that mitzvah is really the commandment, the obligation is only upon a man. So the Al-Sheikh and the Malbim say that, you're so distraught, you're so upset, you don't even have a mitzvah. You don't have a mitzvah to have children. The men have the mitzvah to have children. You don't have the mitzvah. So it's not like you're missing out on some mitzvah that you're supposed to be doing. So don't be so upset by that. And if you're looking for someone to take care of you, sometimes people want children to take care of them. He said, I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you. My estate will take care of you. My children will take care of you. I'll take care of you. You don't have to worry. What we see here, interestingly, is that essentially, and the Malbim points this out explicitly, is that Elkanah has already given up. Very often when couples struggle with infertility, there's this struggle. When a doctor or doctors will tell them, we've tried everything, there is no chance. How much do you retain that hope? How much do you retain the hope that, listen, maybe we have that one in a million shot, maybe something's going to happen, maybe we're going to be blessed with a child? and how much, you know, the nature is beginning to set in, and we've tried this procedure, that procedure, we've been to this doctor, that doctor, and it's just segeitnish, sehelfnish, it's not helping, it's not going to go, well, we're just not going to have children. Elkanah seems here to have given up. Elkanah seems to have given up, and Elkanah seems to be saying to Hannah, don't be so hopeful, because, you know, you might as well give up like I have, because I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to have, I don't think you and I are going to have children together, and I think that you should give up, you know, from all this crying and being distraught, and try to be positive. Try to have a positive life. Try to build your life together. You know, people who are stuck in circumstances that are not ideal. So that's the question. You know, how much do you wallow in your sorrow and in your pain, or do you build a productive, healthy life? And essentially, Elkanah, it doesn't sound like he's giving her such bad advice. Of course she wants children, and of course she should daven, and she should continue to try and to daven and to hope. But Elkanah is saying that it doesn't look like it's going to happen. It doesn't look like, at least al pi derech hateva, that it's going to happen. And therefore, you know, why don't you just let go a little bit? Let go a little bit. You'll be healthier psychologically. You'll be healthier emotionally. You'll be able to move on. You'll be able to build your life, right? Eat a little bit. Feel better about yourself. You know, don't get so distraught by this one fact that you don't have children. That's what Elkanah seems to say. Now, of course, we know that Hannah does not accept this argument, and Hannah is desperate. Hannah feels that she's destined for this. She feels that she's destined to have children, not just destined to have children, but we'll see in a few moments that she's destined to have at least a child who's going to be Oved Hashem in a very unique way, who's going to serve Hashem in a very unique way, as we know that Shmuel eventually does. So if you take a look at Pasuk Tes, Va'atakom Chana acharei achlo v'shilo v'acharei shaso. So she listens to her husband partially. She eats something, she drinks something, probably she feels like, okay, you know what, he's right, just to at least make my body feel, you know, a little bit better, just to you know, to satisfy myself a little, I don't want to starve myself to death. So she eats a little bit, she drinks a little bit, but then she doesn't listen. Vatakam, then she gets up, after she eats and after she drinks, Ve'eli HaKohen Yoshev Al HaKisei Al Mezuzas Heichal Hashem. And Eli HaKohen is sitting on a chair, by the mezuzah, by the doorposts of the Heichal Hashem. Heichal Hashem, of course, is referring to the Kodesh. Kodesh HaKadoshim is in the Azara. Mefarshim discuss a little bit where he's sitting, but presumably he was in the Azara of the Mishkan. And Hannah gets up. She gets up to daven. So we see number one that she ate. You know, she listened to her husband partially. She ate and she said, you know what, he's right. I have to eat and drink a little bit just to satisfy my body. But she did not listen to him about giving up. She has no interest in giving up. She has no interest in stopping to plead and to daven with Hashem. She gets up and she goes straight to the base, to the Mishkan, to daven, and Eli is sitting there. Now it's interesting that Eli is sitting there. You know, why does the pasuk point this out? The fact that Eli is sitting there. Now you could say, well, simply put, because in a couple of psukim we're going to have this, you know, this dialogue between Eli and Hannah. As many of us are familiar, you know, what's going on with her tefillah. But the Chazal pick up on this, and the Midrashim and the Gemaras pick up on this, and they point out that it's not coincidental. First of all, I just want to mention that Marvin Wertenthal, dear friend, mentioned to me today that earlier today, before Shkia, Yud Iyar was actually Eli HaKohen's Yartzeit. So an incredible, obviously there are no coincidences in life, but an incredible thing that we're being introduced to Eli tonight, literally the night after his Yartzeit. But Rashi says here actually that this was the day that Eli was appointed as the Shofet. As we know, Eli was kind of like the final Shofet before Shmuel HaNavi took over. And this was the day that Eli was appointed as the Shofet. That's what Rashi says. The Radak quotes Chazal that says that also today was the day that he was appointed as the Kohen Gadol. So I'm not sure if these two Ma'amari Chazal are one against the other, or if they can work in tandem. But he was appointed as the Kohen Gadol today, which is also interesting because the Mefarshim point out that a person is not allowed to sit in the Azara. A person is not allowed to sit. The only person that's allowed to sit in the Azara is the Kohen Gadol. So the fact that the Pasuk says at the end, Ve'eli HaKohen Yoshev Al HaKisei, it must be that he was a Kohen Gadol. And the Pasuk is pointing this out because today he became the Kohen Gadol, and that's why he was allowed to sit in the Azara. Now, and that's also the it says the Radak. That's also why it's in the present tense. Ve'eli Hakohen Yoshev, right? Eli Hakohen Yoshev, that he is sitting. It's in the present tense because right now that's when this is happening. Right now it's happening that he became the Kohen Gadol and now he's permitted to sit. The Malbim has a very interesting take as usual on this pasuk, and he says that until now, Chana was really relying on the tefillos of her husband. She wasn't davening much, as we know, and that's why Penina was trying to chepper her and taunt her and get her to daven. She was really relying on the tefillos of her husband. Her husband, after all, Elkanah, was a great tzaddik. So she felt, if my husband's such a tzaddik, I'll rely on his tefillos, he'll daven for me, right? Almost like, Yitzchak and Rivka, and, and Kosh Baruch will listen to Yitzchak, so maybe Kosh Baruch will listen to, Elkanah, and he'll grant me children in his merit. But now she sees that Elkanah is not taking this as seriously as she would like. Now she sees that Elkanah essentially is giving up hope and essentially is saying, that's it. You're just not going to have children and you got to give up hope and Shalom al Yisrael and move on with your life. And Chana is not okay with that. That doesn't sit well with Chana. And therefore Chana says, I have to take matters into my own hands. And therefore, Vatakam Chana, she gets up and she goes to Davin. The Malbim also points out here that if Eli is sitting, if the Kohen Gadol is sitting, what does that mean? That means that the Avoda is over. She's going at a time when it's quiet. She's not going at a time when everyone else is davening. She's going at the downtime, so to speak, just to be alone, her and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so she could daven to Hashem. It shows also, says the Malbim, a certain extra level of sincerity in her tefillos now, a certain extra level of devotion and commitment, that she's not just going when everyone else is going. Right? She's not doing this to be Yotzei. She's really putting in a special effort now to go when the avoda's done, the people have gone home, the Kohen Gadol is sitting down, and now Chana shows up just to be alone, her and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'll tell you just a personal anecdote. When I had the great privilege of learning in Rav Chaim Ilson's yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years right after high school. And I was there during my years, and Baruch Hashem, it wasn't too far from the Kotel, from the old city. And so Tisha B'Av, every year Baruch Hashem, I was there for Tisha B'Av, and we would say kinos together. Rav Ilson, like his Rebbe, the Rav, said kinos for many, many hours on Tisha B'Av, until my first year was about until 2:30, and then I think the next year about 2, but early afternoon. I think the Rav, of course, used to go even later, but Rav Ilson used to go till the early afternoon. And I would go to the Kotel later in the day on Tisha B'Av. Now there's a whole beautiful NCSY Kolel Kumzitz there, but in those days they weren't there yet. But I went later in the day when things were quiet at the Kotel. The Kotel is a little bit of a scene. It's a little bit crazy on Tisha B'Av. But I would go later in the day. People were already going home. People want to be home at the end of the Tainan so they could break their fast and they could eat. I would go at the end of the day. And it was quiet. It was the downtime. And you really felt like, I felt like I could really connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think that's what Chana was doing here. Chana didn't want to go with when everybody else was going. She wanted to go when it was quiet. She wanted to go at the downtime where just she and HaKadosh Baruch Hu could connect and she could pour out, as we're about to see, pour out her soul to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, let's see Pasuk Yud. Vehi maras nafesh vatispalel al Hashem uvacho sivke. She is heartbroken. Maras nefesh, she's bitter. She's heartbroken. And she davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and she cries. And says the Malbim that the psukim here, this pasuk and pasuk Yud Aleph, are identifying the four factors that are helping her tefillos be successful. Because as we know, Baruch Hashem, her tefillos are successful, and she's going to have Shmuel. But there are four factors here. Number one, says the Malbim, maras nefesh. She was embittered. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to people who are heartbroken. People who are heartbroken, people who've gone through tzaros, people who've had challenging life circumstances and cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal tell us Hashem has a special place, has a special ear for those people who are heartbroken. That's number one, v'hi maras nafesh. Number two, v'atis palel al Hashem. So some of the Mefarshim pick up, what's this, al Hashem? So some of the Mefarshim just say, it just means el Hashem. She dived into Hashem. It says the Malbim, v'atis palel al Hashem, means that this was pure kavana. This was just to completely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was just, like we said before, it was just, her and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan, almost like she didn't even notice Eli. Even though it's interesting, right, the Pasuk identifies that Eli was sitting there. It's almost like she didn't even notice Eli. It was just her and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just her and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a dialogue. She was just talking to him, spilling out her tefillos. That's factor number two, pure kavana. Number three, Uvacho Sivke. She cried. She cried. The Malbim points this out. The Ralbag also points this out based on the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Beis. Very, very powerful Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos says, in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Miyom Shechara Beis Hamikdash, Ninalu Sharei Tfilah. Once the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the gates of prayer were locked. Now that does not mean that our prayers do not have any power. That does not mean that our tefillos do not go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it means that there is some impediment. There is some blockage between our tefillos and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Ninalu Shari Tfila quotes a pasuk. Sosam Tfilosi, pasuk in Eicha. However, V'yafal Pisha Shari Tfila Ninalu, Shari Dima Lo Ninalu. That the gates of tears are never locked. As the pasuk says, Shima Tfilasi Hashem Veshavasi Ha'azina Eldim Osi Al Techerash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never silent when he hears our cries. So a person who cries sincerely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shari Dima Lo Ninalu, the gates of tears were never locked, even after the Churban Abayis, and those that helps the Tfilos go straight up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says the Malbim, this was the third factor in her Tfilos that was so important. I was thinking to myself that, you know, sometimes it's hard to cry when we daven. Sometimes we can manage to get some tears out, maybe Yomim Noraim, we can get some tears out, or if we're experiencing something really tragic and something really challenging, sometimes we can get some tears out. But generally, it's hard to cry. But I think, and again, this is just my feeling, and I may be wrong about this, but I think that if we put in the emotion that brings tears, and we daven with emotion, maybe that also can help our tefillos get into that Sharei Dima, even if we don't shed the actual tears themselves. But maybe we can kind of squeeze our tefillos in through the emotions. And I think we need to look long and hard at our tefillos. And Baruch Hashem, you know, we're in a situation now where we're not in shul. Unfortunately, we're not in shul and we're davening alone. But sometimes that gives us pause to reflect upon our tefillos and see, you know, how are our tefillos doing? How can we improve? What's good about our tefillos, what's not so good about our tefillos. And one of the things I think we all need to think about in our tefillos, do we daven with enough emotion? Are we davening with enough feeling? When we talk about that the Sharei Tefillah were locked and the Sharei Dima were loni nalu, you know, are we getting in through those Sharei Dima, even if we're not crying? But are our tefillos emotional? Or are we just kind of like, you know, mumbling the words and getting through, you know, davening it up, so to speak, just to get through the tefillos, but not really feeling and not really exuding that emotion as we daven. But the Shari Dima, you know, it's all about the emotion. It's all about that connection, the emotional connection with Hashem. Okay, let's see Pasuk Yud Aleph. And this is a packed Pasuk. So this is the fourth thing, says the Malbim, that she does. In addition to davening and to crying and to pure kavana, and to being embittered, the three things that we mentioned, the fourth thing is that she makes a neder. She makes a neder at the end, and she accepts this neder as we're about to see. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vatidor neder vatomar. She makes a neder. She takes a vow to Hashem, and she says Hashem Tzvakos, and she uses the name Tzvakos, which we'll talk about in a moment. Imra'o sireh ba'ani amosecha. If you will see. Double language, ra'o sireh, we'll talk about that. But if you will see, if you will surely see the ba'ani amasecha, the pain of your maidservant, u'zechartani v'lo sishkach es amasecha, and you'll remember me, and you won't forget your maidservant, v'nasata la'amascha zera anoshim, you will give your maidservant, and again, repeating again, amasecha, 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 we'll talk about that, but you'll give me zera anoshim, you'll give me, descendants, chashuva descendants, holy descendants, unesati v'lashem kol yemei chayov, umora lo yale al rosho. I will give him, I will dedicate him to Hashem for his entire life. Umora lo yale al rosho. We'll talk exactly about what that means. Either it means he'll be a nazir, and a razor will never come upon his head, or it means that he won't have any fear of mankind, only fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But one thing that we see, and we're running a little bit short on time, we'll try to get some of the ideas in this pasuk, and then maybe we'll continue Mirtz Hashem next week. But she makes this neder, and it's interesting if you look at the neder. So the Malbim points out that we know, I spoke about this a little bit on Yom HaAtzmaut from the Im Habanim Simecha, that that we learn from Yaakov Avinu that we're supposed to take a neder We're supposed to take a neder in an eis tzara. That when a person is in an eis tzara, when a person is in a very difficult situation, a distressing situation, they're supposed to make a neder as a zchus to help them get out of that eis tzara. We learn it from Yaakov Avinu when he's running away. The Medrash says when he's running away from Esav, he makes a neder. Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor. He makes a neder that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with him, he'll accept Hashem upon him. He'll return to the land. So that's his neder. And Chana's learning the same thing. Chana is in an eis tzara. Chana feels that she's in an eis tzara. She doesn't have children. She so badly wants children. So she makes a neder. She makes a neder. And that neder is, at least number one, that this son that she has, this child that she has, unesativ la'Hashem kol yemei chayav, that I will give him to Hashem all of the days of his life. And then again, Umara lo yala arosha, we'll talk a little bit about that. Now, one fascinating thing you see here, and this I think points directly to Chana and to why she was so adamant. And she wouldn't listen to Elkanah, who said, listen, give up hope, it's not such a big deal, don't worry about it. Okay, so you won't have children. Chana wants a child so badly. But this is not just emotional. Because a woman who just wants a child for emotional reasons would never say she's going to give him up to Hashem. Essentially, Chana's saying, I'm going to have a child, and then I'm going to basically just give him to the Mishkan. As we know, Shmuel became, from day one almost, he was a Navi in training. She had very little to do with him once he was born. This was Lishma. She wanted a child not because she needed a child, not because she needed to love or to be loved, not because she needed a child to help her out. None of that. She wanted a child, L'shem Shamayim, 100% L'shem Shamayim. She wanted a child because she felt like, this is my tafkid in life, this is my purpose, my mission in life, to have children and to raise them to be Yirei Shamayim, to raise them to be Ovdei Hashem, to raise them to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's my tafkid, that's my role, that's my mission in life. How could I not fulfill my mission? How could I not fulfill my tafkid? And we'll talk a little bit more next week. We're running out of time, but we'll talk a little bit more next week about some of the, her adamance and her determination in these tfilos. But it's so clear that this is what she's all about. She's adamant, she's determined, not for herself. This is L'shem Shamayim. She wants a child who's going to be serving Hashem. She wants a child who's going to light up the world. That's what she wants, and that's why she's so adamant to have that together. Okay, I think we're out of time for tonight. We'll pick up Amir Tz Hashem next week.